This is Piedmont Arts. I'm David Borax. Alvin C. Jacobs Jr. is a Charlotte-based photographer and, as he puts it, an image activist. He uses his camera to document social justice movements and cultural trends, often in black and white. This week on Piedmont Arts, he joins us to talk about his current exhibit at the Harvey B. Gantt Center in Uptown Charlotte called Black Behind Bars. By bars, he means the handlebars of the motorcycles that he and other black bikers ride.
We don't always feel seen. This culture has existed since motorcycle culture existed, since before African Americans and black men and women could purchase brand new motorcycles from dealerships. We were in this culture.
Jacobs talks about black biker culture and the sense of community he finds there, and how riding, he calls it throttle therapy, can help with mental health. Also, Phil Vavra joins with another fanfare segment offering a few entertainment ideas for your week and weekend ahead. That's all to come here on Piedmont Arts from WDAV. Alvin Jacobs is a native of Rockford, Illinois, who's lived in Charlotte since 2012. As a photographer, he's documented some of the nation's major social justice marches and rallies over the past decade. Ferguson, Missouri, after the police killing of Michael Brown, Standing Rock, North Dakota, against the Dakota Access Pipeline, Chicago, Charlottesville, and here in Charlotte. He also photographs professional athletes. Black Behind Bars at the Gantt Center was curated by Keith Cradle and Ricky Singh and includes images shot at black biker gatherings in Illinois, Texas, Florida, and Wisconsin, says Jacobs.
Black Behind Bars was the photographic culmination of 20-something odd years of the physical activity of riding motorcycles. So I'm behind the bars, handlebars specifically, of a motorcycle. Secondly, were the proverbial bars that I had placed myself in through my struggles with mental health. So, black man behind the bars of his own mental prison. And third, which I recently have begun to touch on, is recidivism. Black men behind, you know, the bars of the carceral system. And as with all of my work, there's going to be a social justice component.
So we're going to take a walk through in a minute, but there are images of black bikers and their bikes taken at motorcycle gatherings around the country. You've got the characters, the biker fashion, the fancy bikes, and you're in the middle of it.
These images aren't what you would expect because my work has a signature. I wanted to do something completely different. I wanted to free my creative spirit. I wanted to give myself the license to do something different. You're going to see the culture from an individual that's part of the culture. I learned through my social justice travels that I was never allowed and it was never proper to parachute into a community. Just because you're black doesn't mean that, you know, you fit right at home and you're welcome, you know, in Ferguson, you know, during the protests after Mike Brown was killed. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're welcome in Charlotte, right? Even though you live in Charlotte, you're actually here, you know, when Keith Lamont Scott was killed. So I wanted to photograph and document and capture images of individuals inside of a culture being part of the culture. There's no spectacles inside. There's no burnouts. There's nothing wrong with that, right? That's part of the culture, but we've seen that.
So you're talking about black biker culture. Tell me about your connection with that and how you came to be inside that.
My connection to black biker culture is I'm a second generation biker, and my son is now a third generation biker. I grew up in Rockford, Illinois, less than a mile from the oldest family-owned Harley-Davidson dealership in the world. My father's club, his motorcycle club, was started in 1977. I was born in 1974. So I grew up in this culture. I grew up hearing the sounds of my father's bike. You know, I watched what he wore. I paid attention to how he moved about the protocol space, you know, of being an actual biker. So my mother absolutely refused to allow me to learn how to ride. You're not going to ride motorcycles. You're not going to buy motorcycles. They're too dangerous. And I get it. She wanted me to be safe, but she also didn't want me to become more like my father. When she was telling me these things, they were no longer married. And I got to see really what the life was like firsthand. But how I got really acclimated to the culture was purchasing my first motorcycle. My father didn't help me. He didn't teach me how to ride. And I learned in the same city he was currently residing in. I didn't think to ask him. I just wanted to kind of do this thing for myself, independent of maybe his approval. But what if he told me no? And I didn't want to hear no. So I just learned. I bought, you know, my first motorcycle, and it just was like, this is something I absolutely love. Black biker culture specifically, it's so nuanced. There's so much going on. There's so much even I don't know. And I've been a part of it for 20-something years, directly and indirectly, my entire life.
Your mother didn't like the idea of you getting on a bike or joining this culture, but what were her concerns, and how does that square with what you know about it?
She knew of the culture from what my father brought around and how he brought the culture into the home. They, I believe, were divorced when I was 3 or 4, something like that. And she wanted more from me. She wanted a wholesome son. She wanted a God-fearing son. She wanted a respectable son. She wanted, you know, a young man of her lineage that, you know, was held in high regard. And she felt that if I became a biker, all of that would be out the window. And she wasn't wrong. She wasn't wrong. There was so much in this community, but it's almost as if with anything, if you're looking for it, you'll find it. You just have to be very intentional about what you allow to enter, not only into your spirit, but into your life, and kind of figure out how you want to show up in the culture.
So what did you find?
I found brotherhood. I found camaraderie. I found friendship. I found leadership. I found inspiration. I found passion, a platform, position. These are some of the greatest men and women and, you know, individuals that I've ever encountered inside this community. And I mean, it costs you nothing to be a great person. It's not expensive. It costs you everything to not be a great person. But there are politics involved, but I've been navigating politics most of my life. You know, my sons are in fraternities. They had to navigate politics. And I think they learned that through me, and I learned that through my dad.
Yeah, what doesn't have politics, right?
And, you know, you'll hear it time and time again. If you don't do politics, politics are going to do you. So just learning how to move throughout, you know, not just motorcycle club protocol, because I'm not part of a club, but just knowing how to navigate the nuances of the set, right? Like you pull up and you're in a city you're not from or whatever. You have to know how to move. You have to know, you know, how to carry yourself. You have to be able to hold yourself to a standard, right? Or you will be in very uncomfortable positions, and often. So I'm learning that as long as you can stand your ground, literally and figuratively, this is a culture that you will absolutely learn to love, absorbing yourself into, you know, what it is we do, what it is we love. And it just becomes one incredibly large, beautiful family.
So that leads into my next question, which is, how does your participation in Black biker culture play into your journey with mental health?
So for years, I didn't know what was wrong with me. Unfortunately, in many Black families, in many African-American families, we tend to apply prayer to everything before anything. So if you're diagnosed with something, there's a way you can deal with that. Well, if your parents don't believe in that sort of thing, they would just rather pray. They would just rather, you know, have you talk to a man or a woman of God to figure out, you know, what's going on. It just makes it difficult. It makes it really uncomfortable. And you end up spending years in pain, literally and figuratively, when you didn't have to. So kind of removing some of the stigma of mental health and mental health awareness, and just kind of putting a face to it, putting a culture to it, saying that it's okay to get help. When I'm riding, throttle therapy comes into mind every single time I twist that throttle. As long as it's not
that throttle therapy. Yeah.
Dude, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's like the coolest thing in the whole world. The open road, you know, like the more I ride, the better I feel. And I only ride when I want to. I don't ride when I have to. That's really what's amazing. It's not just transportation. I have other ways to get around. But there's just something so freeing. My endorphins are doing something different. My anxiety isn't as high as it might have been.
I want to hear about your discovery of and journey in photography. How did you come into it, and how has that played into your understanding of yourself?
I came into photography selfishly. I was living in Rockford, Illinois at the time, and I was attending dinner parties, you know, in different areas, you know, around Chicago, and I didn't have a story I felt that was interesting enough. around all of these people that were doing extremely well in life. And I learned that there's pretty much only three tables. And you'll hear it. If you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu. Well, I was at the table, but I really wasn't bringing anything to the proverbial table. So I found out that you're either the smartest person in the room, you know, you've got your PhD, you know, you've got your doctorate or your, you know, your high level master's, and you're the smartest person. Or secondary, you're wealthy, you're rich, you can buy your way into anything. The third and last table, in my opinion, is the talented and the creative table. Nothing else matters. There's no hardworking table. There's no good person table. There's no nice personality table. Educated and or smart, rich and or wealthy, creative and or talented. Those are the tables. Which one do you think I had more access to? Right. Mm-hmm. Creativity and talent. So I leaned into that. I leaned into photography. I picked up a camera. It was a Nikon D5000 with an 1855 lens. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I was doing a photo shoot with like five or six models. It was this fashion line. And I took this photograph and I got the shot and I just kind of broke down right in front of the models. And I'm like, I got it. The shot was right what I needed. Everything fired. The composition was good. I'm like, this is it. I didn't stay in fashion long, but I knew that I had something. And there was a young man that was on, I can't remember, it was federal death row. I can't remember his name, but it was like 2011. And I had my camera and I went to Chicago and I documented this protest. I captured it and I was like, oh my God, this is it. I love this. I love this. Gordon Parks was my hero since I began the process. And I wanted more documentary style photography in spaces where it didn't even fit. I don't want to make excuses. I want portraits out of these protests. I did that for well over a decade. Ferguson, Baltimore, Standing Rock, the protests in Chicago, Charlottesville, Charlotte, Minneapolis. I just kept going. I picked up the camera. I haven't put it down yet, but I added it to an element of political education and social justice. Because every time I look at something, I'm like, ah, you know, what's the angle? What's the social justice angle? What does this look like? And I do it subconsciously. That's why my work looks the way it looks.
That's photographer Alvin C. Jacobs talking about his career and the exhibit Black Behind Bars, on view through September 21st at Gantt Center in Uptown Charlotte. Still to come, we walk through the exhibit and talk about some of his photographs depicting black biker culture. But first, it's time for Fanfare, Phil Vavra's weekly look at arts events around the Piedmont.
Thanks, David. Here's the Father's Day weekend edition of your Fanfare update. Skip the same old golf and grill gadgets for Dad this year and take him out for some live music. There's a lot to choose from, so let's fanfare. Women's Chorus of Charlotte is presenting Circus at the Galilee Center in Charlotte on June 13th and 14th with a cappella arrangements of Emily Sandé's Circus, songs from The Greatest Showman, and more. The two-night celebration will also feature acrobats, clowns, fortune tellers, and even a ringmaster, just like the circus. The jazz tradition of the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band lives on thanks to Gillespie alumnus John Lee. The band will be swinging into the Appalachian Theater in Boone this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. as part of the High Country Jazz Festival, which also includes performances by Catherine Russell and Nolan Maria. The festival runs June 13th through 15th. The 2025 Charlotte Symphony Orchestra Summer Pop Series continues this Sunday the 15th with the Best of Broadway. Symphony Park will be transformed into the Great White Way as the CSO performs iconic pieces from memorable musicals, including Wicked, The Phantom of the Opera, and others. Gates open at 5 p.m., the Tim Scott Jr. Group plays at 7, and the symphony goes on at 8:15. Food trucks will also be on site. And plenty of kids will want to take Dad to the annual Fire Truck Festival at the North Carolina Transportation Museum in Spencer. You can meet firefighters from across North Carolina, see the Jaws of Life demonstration, and vote for your favorite fire truck. There's even a little firefighter costume contest, afternoon parade, and train rides throughout the day on Saturday, June 14th. I'll share more of what's happening across the Carolinas with you next week. And don't forget, you can read my complete fanfare column and find plenty of fun and engaging activities every day on the WDAV events calendar at WDAV.org. Happy Father's Day. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Phil. Okay, we're going to take the last few minutes of this week's podcast to walk through the exhibit Black Behind Bars with Alvin Jacobs. The first thing you see is a black and chrome Harley Davidson, which is displayed on a riser. A recording plays the sound of the Harley's engine. Next to it is a black mannequin wearing black leather and a black captain's cap, popular among black bikers. Photos are in groups around the walls. Let's look at four or five specifically, and you pick one, all right? Perfect. Then I'll pick one, then you pick one. Okay. So why don't you pick the first one?
I will pick, this is Rolling Up. Rolling Up is a archival pigment print on brushed aluminum, and it's one of the first images that I captured at the Black Biker Roundup in Springfield, Illinois. Springfield, Illinois is about 2.5 hours away from my hometown of Rockford, Illinois. So this particular image is about, this young man's about 60-something years old. He was rolling up, you know, down the avenue way on a 2024 or 2025 Harley Davidson Road Glide. And the image captured the energy with some of the trailers in the background because it's a camping style event. And you stay there for 3 days. Black Biker Convention. It's one of the largest in the country.
Now, this one we're looking at a picture of an older man wearing overalls, sitting in a folding chair here at the, I guess it's at the same event. Tell me about this.
This is entitled Family Ties, and it's another archival pigment print on brushed aluminum. And this young man, I walked by him, and he said, "You look like you're doing a lot of work." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You hungry?" I'm like, "I can eat." And this is a family. They had motorcycles, they had RVs, and they were grilling. They handed me a plate, "Get whatever you want." I don't know this man. I didn't know him at the time. But that's really what's so interesting and what makes Black biker culture so amazing. You've got family everywhere. And we just began talking about how long he had been in his club and where he was from. And I mean, the fact that he has on overalls and no shirt was really interesting to me too. And that's in Illinois, it's not in Mississippi. But it was just a really good time and, you know, a really great first conversation with one of the first people that I met at the Black Biker Roundup in Springfield, Illinois.
Are all of these images taken at these rallies, roundups, whatever?
There's the Black Biker Roundup. There's Daytona Bike Week. There's the homecoming Harley Davidson's event in Milwaukee. I have thousands of images. Culling those images and curating those images was no easy task. And there's going to be additional iterations. There's going to be additional photographs added. They're going to be taken in Sturgis. They're going to be taken in, you know, Mama I Tried. They're going to be taken in Shut Up and Ride. They're going to be taken at the Congregation Show, which is here in Charlotte, North Carolina in October. They're going to be captured with the OTR show in Virginia. Like, we're going to continue to travel, and we're going to continue to document this beautiful process of Black biker culture.
So this is an ongoing project of which this is a snapshot.
I like that. It absolutely is an ongoing project, and this is a snapshot, because I had to look at it that way, honestly.
All right, pick another one here.
Let's pick. This image is entitled Black, and it's, again, an archival pigment print on brushed aluminum. This young man is Frederick Franklin. I met him in Milwaukee in passing. I saw this guy walk by. It looked like he was right out of a Easy Rider, you know, motorcycle movie and or magazine. Just dressed in vintage biker gear. And he's about 6 feet tall, you know, dark-skinned brother, you know, with the beard. He's about 61 years old. And I'm like, that's got to be the coolest cat on earth. Ran into him again in Daytona at Miss Sherelle's restaurant. She had a ride, you know, throughout Daytona Bike Week. And just captured some really candid images that ended up being the marquee photograph, right? And he just collects vintage Harley Davidson motorcycles. He has a 1977 Electro Glide Harley Davidson that is entitled Blackula. So he was here. We were able to really spend some great time together. But him being here really just changed the feeling, you know, and a lot of the emotions that we captured from this image. So it's entitled Black. And he asked me, "What made you call it that?" I said, "Well, we hadn't spoken yet, and I didn't want to use the word Blackula because I know that's your thing. You know, I hadn't asked you about it." I said, "But Black, you know, made all the sense in the world." He said, "Man, that's perfect." And that's what they used to call him.
Pick another one here.
So Shadows is a vinyl graphic print. And people act like they don't know that this is a self-portrait.
Well, I was going to ask if this was you.
It is me. And that's my father's jacket that he gifted me. So it's a self-portrait. And I didn't realize this at the time. I have thousands of images, and there's not one photograph of my face in here because it's not about me. So this image is of me, but it's not me. It could be anyone.
It's at night. There's some kind of a railing behind you there. You're standing next to the bike, which is parked. And what's the light?
It's actually broad daylight.
It's broad daylight, really?
It's
okay.
Broad daylight.
I'm going to back up a minute here.
And that's natural light. It's the Camp Northern area, kind of right around the corner from Prism Supply, which have become really great friends of mine. They are titans in the Harley-Davidson vintage motorcycle community. And I wanted just an image that could just be a graphic that represented black biker culture without it being all about me. So I'm wearing my father's jacket. I'm wearing one of the 200 pair of Harley-Davidson boots that collabed with White's boots.
So what do you want people to take away from this show?
That black bikers exist. We don't always feel seen. I don't mean literally, you know, when you're on a highway, absolutely look out for bikers, but this culture has existed since motorcycle culture existed, since before African Americans and black men and women could purchase brand new motorcycles from dealerships. We were in this culture. We have been a part of motorcycle building, motorcycle growth, the motorcycle culture specifically since it began. Harley-Davidson was founded in 1903. African Americans and black folks and Negroes were in America in 1903. So we've always been a part of everything that's been a part of what we know as America. So Black Behind Bars is a dive, right, into not just the black culture of America, the black biker culture of America, black mental health, you know, struggles in America, and, you know, the levels of recidivism around black men and women in America. I want them to take away that there's also freedom attached to the American road, that there's freedom attached to throttle therapy, that it's okay, you know, to talk to someone. You know, I really want to start hosting events about mental health, you know, really start having conversations about how we find out, you know, what's really going on in our community, you know, what some of the root causes are, what we can do better, you know, as a family, in terms of, you know, what's going on mentally, physically, and spiritually in our community and in our culture.
Alvin, thanks.
Thank you.
Alvin Jacobs is a photographer based in Charlotte. His exhibit, Black Behind Bars, is at the Gantt Center in Uptown Charlotte all summer through September 21st. You can find out more at gantcenter.org. That's gantcenter.org. This is the Piedmont Arts Podcast from WDAV. This week's incidental music is Hakodate Line by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm David Borax.